Welcome to Fear-Free Childbirth Podcast with Alexia Leachman, the weekly nine-month podcast to help parents-to-be look forward to their fear-free childbirth. Alexia is a pregnancy and head trash clearance coach and the author of Fear-Free Childbirth, How to Have a Stress-Free Pregnancy and a Positive, Pain-Free Birth. As a mum who's had two fear-free and pain-free births, Alexia wants to share with you how she overcame her pregnancy and childbirth fears, so that you can look forward to having a fear-free birth too. Over the nine-month life of this podcast, Alexia will be sharing some real-life stories from mums and dads, insights into the latest childbirth research, inspiring tales from birth professionals, and some tips and techniques for clearing your fears and stresses. If you would like to receive a free chapter from her book, then head over to fearfreechildbirth.com, where you can also sign up for her email series, How to Have a Stress-Free Pregnancy. But now, it's time for the show.
Hello and welcome back to the Fear-Free Childbirth Podcast. This is me, your host, Alexia Leachman, and thank you so much for joining me today. Now, on today's show, I've got another positive birth story to share with you. Today, I'm going to be speaking to Emily Haslam-Jones, and I met Emily through my local home birth group here in Nottingham in the UK. And I'm really excited to share her story today because Emily is just brilliant. But there's so many aspects to her story that I think a lot of people will be able to benefit from hearing. So let me just sort of share with you a little bit of what I mean. She was diagnosed with gestational diabetes. So she sort of has a really interesting journey to share about how she dealt with that and what that was like for her and the pressures that she was under from the medical community to be induced and all that kind of stuff. And so how she managed that is really, really interesting. But also her background and how her background helped her to prepare with her pregnancy. So let me just give you a hint as to what kind of things she might be sharing with us. Emily used to work in a conflict zone in Nepal and had to deal with guerrilla leaders and warfare and all that kind of stuff. So she really benefited from that work when she was doing her disaster planning for her birth plan and helping to think through what to do in case of an emergency. So again, her perspective and what she brings to her birth preparation from that side of things is also really interesting. But she's also a pregnancy yoga teacher. So it was really useful to hear her talk about all the mind stuff, all the preparation stuff, and all the body preparation stuff that she was doing as well. So there's just so much for lots of us to learn. But importantly, she really talks a lot about how she managed the fear that was being thrown at her quite a lot during her pregnancy journey, again, linked to the gestational diabetes, but also how she prepared in the lead up to the birth to deal with what was happening to her during that birth as well. So much to share. And the other thing is, because we live in the same town, we actually met up to do this, and she had a little tiny newborn. I think her little one was like 3 weeks old when we met up. My little one was, I don't know, 4 months old, something like that. So we had two sleeping babies. We pressed record and we thought, right, they've both fallen asleep, let's go. And I think you can hear some of them crying in the background during the chat. So please don't worry about that. They were okay, but we just kept on growing. So yeah, there's some little babies in the background. It's all live. And I really hope that you're going to enjoy today's chat. It really is a great one. So here's the time that I spoke to Emily all about her pregnancy journey and her birth story. So today on the Fear-Free Childbirth Podcast, I've got Emily with me. And Emily is here to share her story of her birth and her pregnancy. Thank you for coming on the show, Emily.
Hi, Alexia. Thanks.
So just before we dive into your pregnancy story or birth story, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you?
Okay, my name's Emily Haslam-Jones. I run my own company, Yoga Nova. I got into working with yoga and using the body and the breath to help us overcome difficult experiences, any kind of traumatic or fearful experience, through my previous work, because I used to work in conflict. I used to be a humanitarian worker for the Red Cross, so wow. I became more and more fascinated with how we use our body to process the kind of adverse things that happen to us. And through that, I became a yoga teacher. So I teach adults, kids, special needs children, and I work quite a lot with a kind of yoga called Kundalini that works with the nervous system and the glands and gives you a lot of positive, uplifted feelings. So, yeah, I'm really into how we can create positive experiences.
Wow.
With what we've got.
So basically you seem like to me
in a really good position to prepare for a really positive birth experience with the tools that you have available to you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I'd say so. And I'd say my adverse experiences with my old job also made me kind of have a lot of situations where I've kind of tested my intuition on the ground in a difficult situation. And so I've got a lot of trust for myself through those experiences, which I think is really key to getting through this experience.
Yeah. And you said conflict zones. Mm. So I would imagine, were some of those situations life-threatening experiences?
Yes, definitely. I've been in life-threatening situations where I have trusted my intuition and gone against what my boss had wanted, or just had a feeling I didn't want to go in a place and then people have got killed there, that kind of thing. So I feel like I've really had the opportunity to really tune into my intuition and see how it works in very adverse and very difficult situations. And I think that really stood me in good stead for the experience of birth.
Yeah. Okay. So just before we sort of go to the birth, just tell us a little bit about your pregnancy journey leading up. You know, how was your pregnancy for you?
I didn't really enjoy pregnancy, quite honestly. It seemed to be one thing after another. In the beginning, there was a lot of sickness, but basically at probably about 28 weeks, I was asked to have the test for gestational diabetes and was diagnosed with that. And that started my journey of dealing very much with the medical professional kind of world, which I'd never really had to deal with that much. I had been a medical interpreter. It's slightly different when you're on that side of things, but I'd never been a patient as such, and I hadn't really had to engage with that way of being treated as if, you know, they can solve problems that they seem to very much come from an approach of treating you as if the thing is already wrong, when actually there's only a small percentage that something could be going in that direction, but they kind of behave like it's already happened. So for me, my pregnancy was very much a journey of learning to listen to myself and trust myself. When I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, I was suddenly had to engage very much with the medical profession in a way I never have had before, of suddenly being treated like there's something wrong with me. And, you know, when you're a yoga teacher and stuff like that, you're very much into your health and your body, and you know, suddenly there's something wrong. And that whole mindset of being treated as if there's something wrong, when in fact there wasn't actually something wrong. There was a possibility that this higher blood sugar could cause things, but they were so low risk. But they always talk to you and behave as if it's already happening. Mm. And as if it's a certain thing. And so that skill of being able to listen to myself and trust myself was massively important, because I felt like most of my late pregnancy was you know, sometimes I was going every week, sometimes it was towards the end it was even more often than that I was in the hospital, and every time having to defend my point of view and, you know, just sort of be very kind of, well, constantly kind of engage in this discussion about the fact that it wouldn't necessarily have to go that way. So facing the possibility of things which could be more complicated, it was a real feat of mind to be able to not get dragged into a state of deep fearfulness. I mean, and there was a lot of times when I, you know, burst into tears when I was talking to them, because I have such a different approach to the body, you know. And when people are telling me that you kind of, they, you know, even just describing inducing would upset me, because it's just like, I don't want to do it that way, because I understand from what I'd learned very much about how our natural brain chemistry works. And the minute you start interfering with all of that, then your natural ability to make yourself feel good through birth becomes lessened. Then you are more likely to have to rely on other interventions. So right from the beginning, because I didn't want them to interfere with everything else, I decided not to take the metformin drug that they offered me, and to do diet controlled approach to diabetes. And walking for me massively worked, which is great, because it's a meditative practice, it's a very grounding practice. And so I was walking first thing in the morning, because that's when I had problems with my blood sugar. Every weather, you know, whether it was snowing, gale, rain, everything, because that was really, and that gave me such a focus. It was beyond the fact that, you know, it was actually lowering my blood sugar, it gave me so much stamina. And it always kind of helped me bring my perspective back. So that walking was actually, in retrospect, it felt like a gift because, I mean, it just gave me such a good preparation for the birth.
How much walking did you do? What kind of walking?
I mean, not long, long distances, but it was the regularity. I had to be walking for a half an hour to an hour every day. Mm. Sometimes it was two walks, sometimes it was one walk. But yeah, it's like, you know, there's not a question of not going because the weather's... Yeah. Because and if my blood sugar went beyond a certain point, then they would insist on me taking medication, and then it would be easier for them to insist on inducing me early and all the other things that they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So
you had to do this walking. I mean, it was wintertime at this point, wasn't it? So we had proper, like, zero degrees conditions, icy conditions.
Yeah, like rain, wind in your face, completely icy. Yeah.
And you were quite big at this point, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
I'm just thinking back to when I was that point in my pregnancy, and the idea of walking 5 minutes was like, you know, real talent. So walking an hour.
It's the determination. It's just like, I know I'll do anything. You'll do anything for your baby. I'll do anything for my baby. But even though I was doing this diet control and this walking, it was amazing how whenever I'd engage with them, they'd still kind of talk to me as if they weren't really trusting the process. I mean, sometimes I'd have, because the staff would change all the time. Sometimes people would be quite positive, but a lot of the time they're like, well, that's good. You've got it down to this level. But then they'd change the goalposts and sort of say, but we want you to keep it below this even more. And so whenever you'd sort of feel really positive, they'd kind of try and take you down again. And, you know, towards the end, I'd managed to get it really... I was managing to increase the things I could eat in my diet, because at one point I didn't have fruit. I didn't have hardly any carbohydrates, like the tiniest, like a spoonful of rice with things if I'd had a curry or something. And I managed to increase that, and my blood sugars were quite low. I did do acupuncture and other things. And I think that, for me, was a kind of sign that it was pretty much gone. But they were like, no, you've still got it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm telling you, I'm eating these things now. And it's not, you know, obviously these are the readings, it's fine. But they refused to kind of come into the mindset that it could be okay. Mm. And, you know, the kind of risks that they were talking about, like shoulder dystocia and things like this, which where the baby's shoulder could get stuck. There's only a tiny chance that could happen based on the baby being bigger because of the diabetes. But the evidence was showing that my baby wasn't, because they're taking sand. My baby wasn't getting bigger than average. And my baby's dad is enormous. He's a much bigger than average human being. And so they're kind of saying, you know, and then trying to sort of say that we want to induce you because of this. And it's like, yeah, but my baby's, you've just scanned them and you've seen that the baby's not bigger than a normal baby. So it was very much, you know, my practices at being meditative and mindful and the things that I've done for years in my life, they all kicked in, but not in a way that I needed to do more practice. I wasn't sitting around meditating more or doing more yoga practice than usual. I was actually doing less because I had to fit in the walking. I was still working and all those other things. But that way of thinking that it gave me really kicked in and came into its own. So I was using that off the mat every day in the way that I was zoning into how I would just keep tuned into myself and my baby and not be swayed by all this kind of fear being stuck in my direction. And it came to a point, really started to, you know, increase towards the end, because they become more and more nervous because of my age being 38 and my diabetes. So I have problems all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So at week 38, we went in for the scan. The woman says that she was having problems taking these measurements that they want to take to check that the baby's not getting bigger because of the insulin, the diabetes, that kind of thing. And so we go then to see the consultant. And by this point, I've got wise. I've said, I don't want to see the registrar. I only want to see one particular consultant. And then who walks into the room? Not the consultant I want to see, but the one that I have had the biggest kind of difficulty in us understanding each other in the ways that we think. And once she's walked into the room, I'm thinking, can't quite sort of say, actually, I don't want to see you. I wanted the other one. So I do start engaging with her. And part of me thinks, well, you know, they're never going to learn to be different in their thinking if we always choose to disengage with the ones that we find difficult, because then nothing's going to change. So she took one look at the scan and said, okay, your baby's not growing. This means that your placenta stopped working properly. I want to induce you now. At which point, of course, I burst into tears. All the fear kicks in. But underneath that, my resilience is still there and my intuition is still telling me my baby's fine. So me,
how many weeks was this?
It's 38 weeks. But for her, this is the point where she needs to induce me. So she's looking for the information to do that. So this is it. You've got to understand where they're coming from. For her, this is what they want to do with you when you've got gestational diabetes. So she's looking at that. And so we're saying, well, the lady this morning was saying that she didn't really think that she was getting good measurement because of the way the baby was. So couldn't it just be that, you know, there's a difference in the way that it's been measured? And she wasn't really happy with that. And she was talking about the risks. And she basically said, you know, the risk of your baby dying is doubled, you know, from this point. And she was being really fearful and scaremongering. And of course, my fella, Dave, who is good with math and everything, he's sort of going, well, you know, OK, it's double, but from what to what? And then she got really upset when we started to engage in not this kind of comparative risk, but actually looking at what the risk is. And it's still incredibly low. It's gone from 0.3 to 0.6 or something. Yeah. So it's not actually, but the way they always talk is if it's happening. And for most people, that's enough. They're not even going to question that the absolute is. We're getting all a little bit heated, and in the end, I just refused to engage anymore, which is something I didn't want to go there. But I, you know, at a certain point, you have to start protecting. So I said that I was only happy to deal with the other consultant and asked them to go and get the other consultant, who is a wonderful man called Dr. Sims, I have to say, who has just won an award for being so great in terms of his positive input in women's childbirth. Because so many different people in so many different circumstances have had such a good experience with dealing with him. He's quite a Zen master, I'd say. he's got the space to understand beyond their own technical knowledge that there's a place where people can trust in themselves.
Mm.
And he's confident enough with his own skills and experience to let you do that. Because, of course, fear is always a projection, isn't it? So. Yeah. I understand that a lot of the consultants you're engaging with, they're there, they're called in to deal with the most difficult situations. But I know from my own working background of dealing with traumatic situations that, you know, they're trained to deal with worst case scenario and they're behaving as if it's the worst case scenario when it's not necessarily. And so you can understand that they've seen lots of awful things. And they might have experienced losing mothers and babies and things.
Mm.
But all that fear is kicking in and affecting their brain chemistry. You know, their cortisol, their adrenaline is pumping, and then they're projecting that towards you, which is the most dangerous thing for you in terms of getting your brain chemistry going in the way it needs to be. So, I mean, you know, when they're saying they want to induce people and that's bringing up all this fear, which it did in me, I got really upset with that engagement with this particular consultant. And you know, that's the enemy of going into labour, because once you've got high levels of cortisol and adrenaline, there's not the space for the oxytocin to kick in. They can't all be happening at once.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, they're creating that situation where they're going to need to induce you because you can't go into labour because you're so full of fear. So you can see how it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy that you need to induce you. So working your own resistance to cause that is challenging. I mean, and I did find myself 2 days later waking up in the middle of the night and my baby wasn't moving because he was asleep, but because I'd been so fear-mongered, I actually, you know, at that point got afraid and thought, oh God, you know, maybe something's wrong, which I wouldn't have done had I not had to engage with that experience.
Yeah.
But for me, it's been very much a journey of not doing. I know some people decide to completely disengage with the medical profession because they just think, you know, it's all too much. They're trying to put fear into me. And I just think, well, they do have a useful role. There's sometimes that we really need them. There's things that they can do that we need them to do. And there's people in dangerous situations that can be saved from their knowledge. But I don't want to completely disengage with them. But to engage with them is a real process of having such a strength of mind to know and tune in to your baby and your body and know and be able to say, no, I don't want you to induce me. My feeling was that I was okay. Yes, I had that momentary thing 2 nights later, but ultimately, overall, something was telling me that if I'd felt that there was something wrong when she said that, my intuition had told me that, yes, something is dysfunctioning, I would have happily been induced at that point if that's what I'd felt, but I didn't feel that. So, and that's a very hard thing to pass on to other people because you can't explain it to someone else. And I feel very grateful that I had so much practice in life of knowing myself and knowing, because that really, you know, really stood me in good grounding, because now it's not just me anymore. It's me and someone else. It's much scarier to make that decision. It's not just my life.
Yeah.
It's two lives here. So after that, I had very positive experiences engaging with the other consultant. He was great. He did the scans himself and he was happy to let me go to what they considered to be 42 weeks. So I went a whole nother month after this.
Yeah.
I mean, in my mind, because I was very aware of the date of consumption just because of what had happened around the date that they were saying it was definitely this date. And I'm like, I was at a funeral on that date. I don't think so. So I had a very clear idea of when my baby was due. So for me, I went into labour at 40 weeks and 4 days, 5 days was when he was born. But for them, it was 42. And with the diabetes and my age, you know, for him to keep his cool
was good.
Was wonderful to have that experience. So to help let me do what I wanted. I mean, not that they can't, but, you know. I did engage in letting them monitor me, scan me regularly every couple of days.
Mm.
And that meant that there was enough leeway within the medical profession to be able to let me trust myself.
So just on those due dates, just you mentioned, what was the due date that you were given by your midwife and doctor?
So I think it was the 28th of January.
And then what was the...
12th of February.
Okay, so...
And the funny thing about that was that actually when I had my Hindu baby shower, all my friends did a kind of, okay, what day, what time, what position is Emily going to give birth in? I didn't know I'd entered it. And it turns out, after I'd given birth, that the date I'd given was the date I gave birth on. But I had no idea. I don't remember that I'd entered. I just assumed that they'd all done it. And then the email came out and I'd won. I got my day right. And the other thing that I was right about that I had no idea was when I'd been doing my preparation for birth. So I'd been doing hypnobirthing things and I had tried to visualise myself giving birth at home. And I'd got my whole home birth plan sorted. I'd had so much wonderful support from the midwives. The supervisors of midwives. I mean, when I started to have troubles with consultants, the support that kicked in from the midwife team was amazing. So I'd had a problem that there was no consistency because there was a lot of sickness in our midwives here. So they'd sent me the same person again and again, who was a very positive person. So they engaged with giving me constant support from the same midwife, even though she wasn't part of our local team. And the supervisor got in touch with me and they put me in touch with somebody to help me make a particular plan. A planning midwife and someone else to help me be able to get on with seeing if I could express beforehand, so there was some backup colostrum if the baby's blood sugar was affected, which it wasn't. So there was support from the kind of midwife community. Was amazing, the contrast between the midwives who try and problem solve and the consultants who look at it all from the negative what can go wrong point of view. It was unbelievable to sort of engage with these two things. So that was always buoying me, that and the home birth group and all that kind of positive support. So anyway, I try and have a home birth, but in my brain, I cannot see myself in my house.
Really?
It just, that picture will not come to me. And I did go to, at the hospital, I did go to a workshop on the water birth. And whenever I picture what's happening, I picture myself in this pool, in this particular pool in the hospital.
Isn't that interesting?
I was like, okay, so I'm going to make another plan. So I made the home plan, so everything is in place for that. And then I made another plan. Okay, if I go into hospital, how's it going to be? How do I engage with that? I want you to be under consultant-led care. I want everything to be like this. We want you to be monitored the whole way through.
Yeah.
So I wrote down what I wanted and I went in and I engaged in conversations with the consultants. And they agreed to let me have midwife-led care, not to be monitored all the time, because I can't see that there was any way that that would improve the outcome. It helps them say that they were keeping a check on you, but it didn't change anything. So it meant I could move. So I engaged in understanding all the things I wanted to happen if I had to be in hospital and got them to sign and agree. And the signature is important because it means that they've really agreed to that. So they can't change their mind at the last minute if you turn up at the labour ward and...
So you did that well in advance, did you?
Before you went in advance, and that really helped. So I knew that I had...
You've approached this like a military operation.
Well, I've got disaster preparedness training. You know, I've done flood response and various things. Yes, and you know, so I've just... You were trained in the Red Cross to respond to all possibilities. You know, you have to plan what you're going to do potentially in all kinds of difficult situations. So I suppose I took that approach. Yeah.
And were you doing, in terms of the other preparation, were you reading about, you know, the risk of induction?
I read some really good stuff. And I read some of the, you know, the classic tests that all the midwives read, childbirth without fear, which, you know, is a bit of a wordy thing, but, you know, it did make me understand a lot about the brain chemistry. I mean, that book was written decades ago, and there's an obstetrician in it who's talking about the danger of the way that the medical profession engages with women affecting their brain chemistry. This is a long time ago.
And I engaged
in a discussion with the registrar a couple of months ago about this, and about the oxytocin when you put it in to somebody through inducing them and it doesn't come naturally, how that's not affecting the brain. So you're not getting that happy, light, wonderful feeling that gives you a childbirth without pain and fear. And she said, well, it must cross over into the brain. She didn't know the answer. She didn't know that the drip oxytocin, whether it went over into the brain and affected it. I mean, why did she not know this? This is in a book by an obstetrician. There's a classic test written a very long time ago, and all the midwives knew this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then there's some really great sort of stuff, very positive things in a book called The Heart in the Womb, which is an obstetrician who had gestational diabetes and totally disengaged with the medical profession and had a home birth.
Mm.
Her brain was completely changed by being pregnant. So I found all these, you know, I went and found all the positive things that I needed. And of course, you know, listening to the wonderful stories, positive stories of other people is massively important because, as we know, you know, general society goes towards the kind of fearful, scary, painful stories. So we had all that in place, and then it comes to point where I go into labour. So I come in, I go into labour through having a sweep, because I was prepared to go as far as that. I didn't want to go to be as far as being induced, but I was prepared to do that.
Mm.
And I wasn't really, they weren't really able to do it properly. I wasn't ready, which I sort of said I wasn't. I mean, I kind of knew I wasn't because, you know, it was too early. And then when we tried it the last time, I was pretty, I think it was 3 or 4 centimetres dilated already. I had been for some days.
Yeah.
But I really had so many contractions, things going on. I wasn't really feeling, I was like, okay, things are feeling like they're happening, but I'm not really feeling like this is something different because we've been here so many times and it's never really transpired into anything. And then a few hours later, I did start to feel a bit different. And after a while, I start thinking, these kind of like period-like feelings are a bit different than just the kind of tightening feelings I had before. So maybe it's happening this time, but I'm still not willing to kind of like really engage in the idea that it's happening. So this went on for a while until the point where, this could be labour this time. I think this is really...
When you say a while, how long?
I don't know.
A day?
It's very, the thing is, the concept of time, once you, as you know. As you go into labour, is a bit odd. No, this is over a course of, 3 or 4 hours. Maybe.
Okay.
So I'm at home having a bath. Dave goes and gets our neighbour, and she helps count the contractions. And we decide that it's probably time to call up. So I call up, and the midwives say, "Oh, you're the 4th person that's called tonight. I really don't want to say this, but, you know, you might have to go into hospital." And I just go, okay, fine, I've got a plan for that, which absolutely stumps them beyond belief. And in fact, the first midwife who came to visit me after I gave birth had heard about me, because I think they've never had someone who's just gone, okay. Because normally at this point, people go, because they can't get the outcome they want. Yeah. And then they haven't envisaged how to deal with the other scenario, because they're very focused on, it has to be this way.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just like, oh, that's why I could never see myself at home. Okay. We roll with the plan of what I could always see was happening anyway.
Yeah.
So it was just like, because I could never understand before when I was doing my, why can I not see myself at home?
Yeah.
Why am I not at home?
Mm.
I couldn't have known.
No.
But somehow I did know that there was going to be no opportunity for me to have a midwife for that particular evening. Everyone was giving birth, it seems. It was a really busy night.
Busy night on the 12th of February.
So I go into the hospital, and then they give me a choice of being in the new midwife-led unit or being in the kind of what is the consultant-led area, where there's these proper big pools. The midwife-led area's got these kind of... blow-up pools like you'd have at home, but so I know exactly which room they're going to take me to. I'm like, no, not this room, it has to be that one. So I go into the room where I know I'm going to give birth, and then I stay in that room for the whole of the birth.
So how did the birth go?
The birth was, I really enjoy giving birth compared to pregnancy, which I didn't really have a great time with. It was very strange for me, being very bodily connected. I think it was all very, I felt everything very kind of profoundly. Every bit of pregnancy is like quite, you know, feeling nauseous when you use a job, have a job where you physically use your body and stuff is quite challenging. So for me, the pregnancy thing with all this battling with all these sort of negative thoughts being thrown, it wasn't fun. But giving birth, I absolutely loved it. It was just great. I'd do that a million times over. It was just wonderful.
So what was it that you liked so much about the giving birth? Like,
because it is, it's a meditative headspace. It's a real state of consciousness that it's all that stuff that I play with for a living, you know, your state of consciousness, uplifted, elevated feelings. I mean, the oxytocin is so high in your brain. You're so high. I mean, I was quite a dabbler when I was younger in various kinds of, let's say, non-natural highs. And in some ways, giving birth did remind me of, you know, being a bit of a young party animal and a raver, because you go out on a night and you're committed. You know, whatever happens, you've got to see the whole thing through, you know. And it does have that kind of element to it, you know. Once you're in there, you've got to have the stamina to keep going. It's just like, till the sun comes up, that's it, you know. So there was definitely that kind of, that did make me laugh, that kind of comparison, that it did have a feeling of being a bit like that. And yeah, it was a really positive, uplifting experience that, just like dancing all night, gets you really tired, but it gets you really high and you love it. So
how long was your birth? How long did all this...
I find that one a really hard question, because it's like, well, which point do you count it starting? Well, yeah. Because everyone has a bit of a different
idea. So when you went into hospital...
So I must have gone into hospital about 11:30 at night. And they did say that I could have gone home and come back again, but I knew that I just wanted to be in one place. You know, if I was going to go in, I didn't want to be... faffing about. And this is the other thing, you know, in a way, if I'd started having a home birth and I'd had a midwife that was not comfortable with the blood sugars thing, because they went a bit high at the beginning, but then they waited and it went down, it fine, they would have sent me in anyway. And I didn't want that disturbance and that disruption wherever I was going to be. I wanted to go there and be there, and that was that. So I went in and they assessed and they said, well, but actually, you know, I wouldn't have had that much time to go home and back again to the point where I was dilated to...
Yeah, and it was slowed labour down, all that movement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I went in and I spent some time in the shower and eventually did get in the water. But my dear friend Pam had made a particular hypnobirthing track for me that had all the things I wanted in it.
Oh, lovely.
And it even had wonderful bits in it, like... where she was talking about the chain of beads that I'd been given by all my friends.
Oh,
and that was like on the side of the water pool in front of me. And my dear friend Ginny was there and my partner David was there. And at one point she was talking about the beads and the connection and all the people that were, you know, kind of with me. And everyone was crying. It was just like, oh, such a lovely moment to have such a personalised track like that that went on for a very long time. So I was playing that round and round again. I spent a lot of time in the pool, standing up, squatting. I was even more in my own space than I thought I would be. I thought I would rely on my friends and my partner more than I did. It was quite interesting because when we talked about it afterwards, my dear friend who was there said that she'd never had an intuitive experience like it. Whereas with my partner, as though even though we're connected, I think there's something different in the role of a woman. He would go to rub my back or something or pour some water and I'd be like, no, and I'd be like this, you know. And whereas she said that with her and me, it was like before I would say something, she'd know.
Yeah.
And it would always be exactly how I wanted it to be, whatever she would do. There was obviously some kind of
connection
that was, she said she's never experienced anything like it. So it was really great having that support, and the midwives really kind of hung back because they could see that the support that I had was really good. And they were really good in sticking to my birth plan, in that they really gave me the space, you know, like my blood sugar went a bit high in the beginning and I was throwing up and stuff like that, and instead of straight away putting me on a drip, which would have not have allowed me to go in the pool and stuff, they just waited, and then, you know, it balanced itself out and it was all fine. So they did really adhere to the idea that, you know, rather than just kind of going, oh, well, this is happening and reacting, just waiting and seeing. So it was very much that I emphasised that I didn't want things to be done just on the basis of the time passing, because there's very much in the kind of way that they're trained, it's like, okay, this much time has passed, so we expect this to happen, which, you know, is an average. It's not, everybody's a bit different. So they really did give the grace of, you know, that you have the more time and space to let it happen in your way. Unfortunately, there was a change of shift at a point just before I went into transition, which didn't really help, because then there was a younger, less experienced midwife who came in, who stood back, but I feel at some point maybe she could have given a bit more input. But again, she let me go through quite a lot longer than they would have done if they'd had me under their whole consultant-led care, kind of the way that they wanted me to be in hospital. So she respected that I needed the space to do it myself. Although what was happening right towards the end, so at the point in transition, I decide that my husband's being a bit impatient, so I just chuck him out. He is slightly impatient, so am I by nature. So I decided that he needs to go.
And so you asked him to leave the room.
Yeah, I don't know how whether I articulated why he had to leave the room to him or not. I'm not quite sure how it happened at the time, because of course you're in this really deeply connected mindset, you know, and I was vocalizing lots of sound, and I was, it's a complete trance. It's a wonderful place to be. It's a primal, empowering experience like nothing I've ever had. Everything I've ever done in life before feels like peanuts. It's like, that was the real deal. That's like really being alive. So I'd thrown him out, and I was there with Ginny, and things were going fine. But basically what seems to be happening was that he was kind of, the baby was pushing to come out, but kind of coming back in. Now, this doesn't surprise me at all. I've always had a bit of a strange curve in my cervix. Whenever they try and do anything like a smear test or a sweep or anything, it's always really difficult. So eventually the midwife had gone to get the higher up midwife, and we had to sort of work out a way of dealing with this. Fortunately, my husband's not in the room at the time. So when we talk about the idea of putting my feet in stirrups, which you'd think would be the last thing that I would do, but actually it's not counterintuitive, because I know that lifting my hips, which is what I had to do, I took a bolster with me to do the sweep, because lifting my hips is what helps with the shape that I am. So I was up for that. Unfortunately, he didn't know that. So when he came back in the room, he's thinking, whoa, how did they get her in that position? I completely consented to it. But if you didn't know that bit, if you weren't there, that was a bit of a shock. It's because you wouldn't think that I would go for such an old school thing. But yeah, again, it's taking the moment, understanding what's happening, and going, okay, you know, this is not them saying, we want to do it this way. This is me going, well, I know my body. I know that this thing happens. So, okay, we need to try something else, because the bit which is supposed to take an hour to two, we're already going towards with 3 hours here.
Yeah.
So we need to change the program. We need to do something differently. So we were working on this plan, and at that moment, I've asked my friend to go out and ask Dave to get the bolster out of the car so that we've got that other option. Now, there's a consultant outside who knows that they are not in the room anymore, who decides to come in at this point. Maybe a coincidence, maybe not. And this consultant comes in and is really, you know, I don't know what she'd just been doing, whether she'd just been doing some dramatic C-section or something, but she came in with all that kind of fear and anxiety. I asked her to leave. She refused. I asked her to talk to my husband, because that's what it says in my birth plan, and then he would talk to me, because I could then not break my connection of my mindset by going into the language part of my brain. It's easier for me to connect to him. She refused. She was obviously in a state of extreme anxiety and was saying that, you know, I was under consultant-led care. I don't know if somebody hadn't shared my birth plan with her or what had happened, but she was obviously in a state of deep distress about the whole thing. The strange thing is that what we were doing and engaging with the midwives could have happened at home birth. Okay, we wouldn't have had the stirrups, but, you know, in terms of changing the position, discussing that maybe we needed to cut an episiotomy to help the head come out, you know, this stuff was not high consultancy stuff. Yet she, for some reason, couldn't cope. But the thing is that I was so high by this point.
And you were high on endorphins.
Yeah.
You weren't, have you, or had you taken gas
and
air?
No, gas and air, nothing, no. Completely harmless. This was, when I had those kind of period-like sensations, I'd had a paracetamol very early on, one. Okay. And I hardly ever take those. That was it. Everything okay. else was just entirely on my natural brain chemistry, you know, using, breathing obviously probably increases that effect. Yeah. So
when you say you were high, so you weren't experiencing, I'm going to say the P word now, pain. Did you experience pain?
Oh, it was a little bit of a kind of when we did the last bit of squeezing out, but I wouldn't exactly describe it as pain. I don't know. It was okay. It was. I don't really understand the pain thing. I don't really get it. I think, yeah, things are as painful as you decide they're going to be. Mm. I mean, if you look at read up your stuff, you know, in the uterus, there isn't the receptors for pain.
Yeah.
So it has to be in your head.
Yeah.
There's some sensations when the last bit of pushing goes out that are a bit tough, but I wouldn't exactly describe it as pain, no.
No.
No. Mm, okay. And you know, all that stuff that's been going on through the labour, which is massively upping the hormones and the chemicals in your brains and the endorphins are going, it if you get into that real state of deep trance and consciousness, nothing can touch you. So she couldn't touch me. She couldn't rain on my parade. It wasn't happening. And at some point she melted away and disappeared. I don't know. She wasn't there when we did the final part of it. But
so when little one showed up, you mean?
So little one showed up. He did show up. And then I naturally did a placenta. He was feeding on me. Again, there is a little bit of medical impatience in there. I don't, it must have been kind of, the placenta was coming out and they seemed to think that they had to sort of take some kind of instrument and pull it rather than just let it. There's definitely this kind of impatience that they just can't help having a little bit of a interfere. Yeah. But there was no interference that wasn't consented to by me. And it was, I feel in a way that kind of little moment where there was kind of this barge into it. Yeah. It kind of had to happen because I am who I am and I...
You know, like a bit of drama.
What? No, because I'm trained to teach pregnancy yoga and if I've never experienced anything adverse, how on earth can I relate to the people who are coming to me if everything's just a dream for me? You know, people kind of don't want an ideal model, if you know what I mean. They want a reality. You know, I had a wonderful birth, but birth, like, it prepares you for the reality of life with children, that things are a little bit imperfect in their perfection. Do you know what I mean? Things aren't exactly. And this is the thing that I learned very much from listening to other people's birth stories. It was the people who had a very fixed idea exactly. It's like, it's not that you shouldn't have a really strong mind and a very strong focus about what you have to happen, but it's combining that with the ability to let go and flow with whatever comes. And that's much harder than it sounds. And it's such a, it sort of almost sounds like a paradoxical thing to be able to let go and let whatever happen and also have a very fixed idea of what's going to happen. But it is that combination that gets you through to where you want to be. Because what I saw in people's stories who had had a difficult time is that they had a very clear idea of how it's going to be. And when it didn't go that way, they kind of threw the whole thing out instead of having an idea of, okay, if things don't go quite how I exactly want them to be in my head, how do I deal with that and keep it as a positive experience? So for me, my planning and my preparation was very much around how you can be prepared in a way for what you don't know will happen. And again, my background in dealing with things where you don't know what's going to happen when you have to go and find, you know, underground guerrilla leaders and try and get them to show you their detainees and deal with people who are doing training in battlefield triage and all kinds of things like that, you kind of got a bit of an unpredictable element. So it's that being able to trust in yourself and really trust in yourself through all those unpredictable elements and not be so like, hey, I'm yoga teacher, I'm like this, I'm not going to even try stirrups because that's so old-fashioned. Come on, you know, like, the reality is that I understand my body enough to know that we needed to try something, that lifting me up in a certain way may work. That could have been another option. But, you know, you're not in a state to engage in a long philosophical discussion with somebody about whether you should be better off on all fours. You're, you know, you're in your zone and you want the minimum engagement in having to talk or that kind of, you know, using those parts of your brain that are kind of analytical. That's not where you are. And because that's not where you are, that's why I loved it so much, because I'm very attuned to the kind of the non-analytical brain, let's say. Yeah. You know,
so you're able to zone in.
Yeah.
Quite that felt like you didn't have to try very hard about that. It happened naturally for you.
Yeah. So I think that preparation is massively important.
So would you say in terms of
whatever your way is, you know?
And so in the 6 weeks or so leading up to your birth, how much of that time do you think you spent in preparation mode?
All of it. In a way that, because you live in a more mindful way because your body's slowing down, that you know, it's everything and nothing. You have the moments where you think you're so tired of being ready and it not happening, you know. You're kind of on call, aren't you? You're waiting for this thing to happen. Yeah. It doesn't. And there's moments where you kind of drift out of it and kind of try and be a bit kind of like, hey, normal, I'm going to go to the cinema or whatever. But overall, you know, somehow there's part of you that's always preparing, I feel.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing lots of using positive affirmations and always drawing myself back to look at my fears and try and understand where they're coming from and try and understand, you know, why is it that I always seem to not be able to just respect authority and you know a lot of people will just respect the medical profession just because they are specialists. Why do I have to question it? You know, am I questioning it just for the sake of it because that's my personality? You know, all those things were always, I'm always looking at why am I reacting the way I am. Is it, is it just a reaction because I have a kind of need to not trust authority or something? Yeah. You know, am I really doing this for the right reasons? So, you know, I will always sort of unpack my baggage and look at it and try and understand where I was coming from. Why did I feel the need to sort of have this kind of very, you know, I wouldn't say it was fighting, but you know, questioning.
Yeah,
always challenging. Questioning and challenging whenever anyone was asking me to do something, you know. Is it just that I'm just a challenging person by nature? But you know, after making sure that I'm not just doing it for the sake of doing it, that I'm doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, which I think is an important part of the pregnancy journey, especially when you're trying to connect to who you are and really understand and be able to trust your intuition. You need to unpack your baggage, like you say, because in that moment, if you're going to trust your intuition, you need to know you are doing it for the right reasons and not because of this little personality quirk of yours. And so you need to kind of work on that while you're pregnant so that on the big day, you're fully in the right place.
Exactly. To be able to deal with it. Issues around things like trust. In my history, I have a history of various incidents in my life, let's say, that have been not to my consent. So I obviously have some things around fear and distrust around my body, around the idea of not being conscious and someone deciding or trying to do something to my body. So it happened in a sexual context, but ultimately you can see there's a parallel when you're talking with the medical profession. They want to do something and you're in a state where you're not necessarily that verbally articulate or able to engage with them in a way that means that you're in control of whether that happens or not. So that can be, you know, those kind of fears can come up and they could be drawn out again and project into that situation. So I spent time looking at all of these things and finding my ways to find my peace with things in my history so that I knew.
So did you look at, when you look back at your pregnancy journey then, did you use it as an opportunity to really rummage through your stuff?
Yeah, I think everything is. I just think things are better out than in. And the thing is that they don't always have to be analysed to be able to be gone.
Yeah.
You don't always have to understand all of it.
No.
But it is, I think, you know, the lighter you travel, the easier it's going to be on a journey like that. You know, you don't want a lot of baggage holding you down when you've got to kind of exert that amount of energy to get the baby out in that small amount of time. You need to be travelling light, I'd say.
Well, no, that's been a fascinating story account. All of it's just been really, really brilliant. I'm not sure there's anything that you haven't said, but if there's a pregnant mum listening to this now, is there anything else you'd like to sort of share just to kind of inspire her that, you know, to have a fear-free birth, a positive birth? Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just do whatever you need to do and trust that you know what you need to do, that you don't necessarily have to do yoga, or there's not like a fixed idea that there's one answer that's right for everyone. But just trust that you can go with whatever you need to do to be able to get in touch with yourself so that you can have the experience that you want.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Emily, for sharing your wisdom and stories and all the rest of it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been lovely to talk to you, Alexia.
Thank you for tuning in. You've just been listening to Alexia Leachman from the Fear-Free Childbirth Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really love it if you left a review on iTunes or Stitcher, or shared it with a friend. And don't forget, to get a free chapter from her book, head over to fearfreechildbirth.com to get your copy, as well as finding other episodes in this podcast and more about how Alexia can help you with pregnancy and birth preparation coaching. Until next time.